today on Against the Grain, achieving peace of mind, reigning in desire, finding contentment. Ways of doing this were spelled out more than two millennia ago by the Stoic philosophers of Greece and Rome. And guess what? Everything you think you know about Stoicism is probably wrong. I'm C.S. Song. Will bring you a conversation with William Irvin, author of A Guide to the Good Life, The Ancient Art of Stoic Joy, after these news headlines.
I'm Eileen Alfandari. Supporters of Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez are holding street celebrations to welcome him home. The government says Chavez returned to Venezuela early today after more than 2 months of treatment in Cuba, where he had cancer surgery. Hundreds of supporters gathered in a plaza in downtown Caracas, chanting his name and holding photos of Chavez.
We await you with open arms. We love you and we will support you forever.
The Venezuelan leader's precise condition and the sort of cancer treatments he is undergoing remain a mystery. There is increasing speculation that Chavez may not be able to remain in his post as president. Tens of thousands rallied in Washington in the largest demonstration ever against global climate change. Demonstrators urged President Obama to reject the proposed Keystone XL pipeline to transport oil produced from the tar sands of Canada to Texas Gulf oil refineries. An estimated 4,000 took part in a San Francisco rally, including this Berkeley woman.
You cannot keep injuring the earth. Its ability to heal is not infinite. And unlike human mothers, Mother Earth does not forgive and forget and go back to life as usual. It gets worse and worse.
Hundreds more marched in Los Angeles and in San Diego. The head of the NAACP says even some members of the New York Police Department oppose the city's policy of stop and frisk. Benjamin Jealous told a Brooklyn church congregation the civil rights group is hearing from its members who are New York City police officers. The NYPD practice of stopping, questioning, and sometimes frisking hundreds of thousands of people on city streets each year has received widespread criticism and is the object of lawsuits. Officials say the technique deters crime. Critics say the stops are ineffective in combating crime, are based on racial profiling of young men of color, and intimidate innocent people. A Syrian official has said for the first time his government is prepared to talk to armed opposition groups. The remarks came from the Syrian Minister for National Reconciliation. He is not part of President Assad's inner circle. Assad said last month there would be no dialogue with armed rebels, whom the government refers to as terrorists. International Syria mediator Lakhdar Brahimi yesterday called for talks at United Nations offices between the opposition and an acceptable delegation from the Syrian government on a political solution to the war. In South Africa, respected anti-apartheid activist Mamfele Ramphele launched a new political party to challenge the country's ruling African National Congress. Ramphele said self-interested and corrupt leaders are threatening South Africa's future.
What we're offering voters is an opportunity for us together as South Africans to build that country that we said in 1994 is the country of our dreams. The country which will be known for unity in diversity.
Ramphele is a medical doctor and former World Bank managing director. She was the partner of Black consciousness leader Steve Biko, who died in 1977 in apartheid police custody. Ramphele herself was placed under house arrest for 7 years by the apartheid government. In a statement, the African National Congress rejected Ramphele's criticisms that it is to blame for income inequality, social violence, failing education, and other problems. A party spokesman said the criticism of the ANC is a failure to acknowledge that many of the challenges were not created by the ANC. They are historical. The U.S. Coast Guard is probing a high-speed crash that took place over the weekend on the San Francisco Bay between a Golden Gate ferry and a 22-foot motorboat. The Bay Area News Group reports one person in the motorboat died of injuries in the crash. Another remains hospitalized with severe injuries. Investigators are trying to determine who was at fault. The ferry was headed from Sausalito to San Francisco with about 500 people aboard. None of the ferry passengers was injured. I'm Eileen Alfandari. News returns at 3:30 with Free Speech Radio News. Headlines at 4. Please join us at 6 for the hour-long Pacifica Evening News.
Studios of KPFA in Berkeley, California. This is Against the Grain on listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio. My name is C.S. Song. Happiness, contentment, equanimity, peace of mind. Does any of this, or I should say, does achieving any of this interest you? Much of academic philosophy has long since turned away from addressing questions like how should we live and how can we be happy? But today's program is not about modern philosophy. It's about thinkers in ancient Greece and Rome who cared about peace of mind and contentment so much that they devised practical strategies for getting there, for dealing with loss, for reining in our desires, for handling insults, and much more. The thinkers were the Stoics. And if you think you know what a Stoic is, today's program and today's guest will make you think again. Founded by a man named Zeno, the Stoic school of philosophy flourished first in Greece and then in Rome. And they attracted followers and students precisely because they proposed ways of living a happier, fuller, more rewarding life. What are those ways, you ask? Can those methods apply to today, times of mass anxiety and profound uncertainty? William Irvin is a philosophy professor at Wright State University. He's also author of A Guide to the Good Life, The Ancient Art of Stoic Joy. I recorded an interview with Bill Irvin when the book came out. You'll hear portions of it and have a chance to get his book and or the complete interview for a pledge to listener-sponsored KPFA. But let's get to Stoic philosophy and the psychological techniques they promoted. I began by asking Bill Irvin whether most people consciously develop a philosophy of life.
I think it's something people don't think about. They fall into what for most people is the default philosophy of life, which is a form of enlightened hedonism. And they want to have be comfortable. They want to experience pleasure. They want to avoid pain. And most people never get beyond that.
Tell me more about enlightened hedonism and why so many people adopt that philosophy.
Well, let's talk a little bit, first of all, about hedonism. And, of course, hedonism, a hedonist is a person who simply wants to be comfortable and enjoy, experience as much pleasure as he can in life. I suspect that we were evolutionarily programmed to seek pleasure and avoid pain. So it's kind of programmed into it, and that's why I say it's our default philosophy of life.
And why is it important to have a philosophy of life other than a kind of enlightened hedonism?
Well, the danger is that you will mislive, that you'll spend your life doing things that seem sensible and realize very late in the game that, in fact, you had this wonderful one-time opportunity at life and you spent it either pursuing the wrong things or maybe pursuing the right things but pursuing them in a foolish manner. And you'll end up with a lot of regrets.
So how did you first become interested in Stoicism?
I became interested in it in a roundabout way. My book before this book was titled On Desire, Why We Want What We Want, and it was a wide-ranging explanation of human desire. And I went into that with a kind of an ulterior motive. I knew that in the process of doing research for that book, that I would be able to explore Zen Buddhism in considerable detail. And I sort of thought that I would come out of the research project a full-fledged Zen Buddhist. And then a funny thing happened. The more I learned about Zen Buddhism, the more I realized that the fit just wasn't right between Zen Buddhism and myself. I'm a relentlessly analytical person, and Zen Buddhism would require me to turn off a lot of that analysis. Now, I'm not saying Zen Buddhism is a bad philosophy of life. There are many interesting parallels, in fact, between it and Stoicism. It's just that for me, the fit didn't work. Given my personality and my circumstances, it didn't work. And then the other surprise in the research was Stoicism, which at one time would have been a non-starter for me as a philosophy of life. The fit was wonderful. I found myself in a low-key way kind of putting their advice to work in my everyday life. And before I knew it, I was this rare entity, a 21st century human being who was a practicing Stoic.
What parallels did you find between Zen Buddhism and Stoicism?
One thing is they both think tranquility should be one of your primary goals in life. And once I say that, I have to do a little bit of explaining, because some people think that by tranquility I mean, you know, the kind you could get by ingesting a tranquilizer. But for both of them, tranquility meant the relative absence of negative emotions in your life. Negative emotions like anger, fear, grief, anxiety, and the presence of positive emotions, with the most positive of positive emotions being feelings of joy. Both the Zen Buddhists and the Stoics believe that you should not become attached to things. You shouldn't cling to the world around you. And the Stoics developed some wonderful techniques for avoiding doing that. Both thought that to the extent possible, you should live in the present moment. And the Stoics were emphatic about this. I mean, most people go through life. The present moment consists of anxiety about the future moments they're going to experience and regrets about the past moments. And they were very interested in overcoming those emotional states so that you could embrace the present moment. And in fact, more generally, so you could embrace the life you're living, whatever that life might be.
Well, one thing you're very interested in overcoming are popular conceptions, popular misconceptions of what Stoicism is and what a Stoic is. Could you remind us what most people, and you, in fact, before you got into this field, think about what a Stoic is and how a person who is a Stoic acts?
Yeah, Stoicism, the Stoics in general, are victims of a bum rap. And unless you're an unusual person, everything you know about Stoicism is wrong. I mean, that was certainly the case with me, and I had studied philosophy, you know, as an undergraduate. I was a major, and then I went to graduate school. But people commonly think that the Stoics, the uppercase S Stoics, were lowercase s stoical, and that is that they were grim and unfeeling individuals, that they were emotional icebergs who kind of stood there and quietly took whatever life threw at them. But as I say, it turns out that the Stoics aren't opposed to emotion, but they're very much in favor of minimizing the number of negative emotions that we experience. And when I started reading about the lives of the Stoics themselves, it turns out that they were an unusually cheerful bunch of people. And you can find any number of passages where they tell you that what they're aiming at is joy, a state of joy. So it's the opposite of what you would think. I mean, other things came up in the research. It turns out that the skeptics weren't skeptics. The cynics weren't cynical in the modern sense. So we have a pretty dramatic misconception of all of these ancient philosophies.
We're speaking with William Irvin. He is a professor of philosophy at Wright State University in Dayton, Ohio, and author most recently of A Guide to the Good Life, The Ancient Art of Stoic Joy, recently out from Oxford University Press. Let's turn to some of these psychological techniques advocated by the Stoics. One that they advocated had to do with something you call negative visualization. What's that?
In negative visualization, you actively think about the bad things that could happen to you. You actively think about how your life could be worse. You contemplate it. So I don't want you to get the idea that the Stoics sit around and just dwell on this and just are anxious about it. But you just imagine the things that could happen that are negative. We all know that friendships can come to an end. You know, sometimes friends quarrel, sometimes friends die. And so the Stoics said, you know, when you say goodbye to your friend, one of the things you should do is you should allow the thought just briefly to enter your mind that this might be the last time you see your friend. Why would anybody do that? It seems like such a negative thing to do. It's because if you do that, you'll appreciate that friend in a way you won't appreciate him if you think, as most people do, that he'll be there forever. Another thing the Stoics said you should contemplate is your own death. And again, that seems like a terribly negative thing to do, except they claim that by contemplating your own death and by thinking, by realizing fully that you won't be here forever, if you do that, you will enjoy life so much more intensely than if you imagine, as many people do, that they're going to be around forever.
You bring up in this chapter the example of two fathers, one of whom periodically reflects on his daughter's mortality. Take us through this scenario.
Yeah, this is a line from the Stoic philosopher Epictetus, who gives this advice. He said, as you're kissing your daughter goodnight at bedtime, you should pause and think to yourself that this might be the last kiss, that she might be gone by tomorrow, by the morning. And when I've had my students read that, they're all just appalled. That's a terrible thing to do with a kid. Now, you're doing it in your own mind. You're not telling the kid, you know, you might die tonight, but you're reflecting on that. The claim is, and I believe this is true because I've done it, the claim is that if you do that, you will value your daughter. If your daughter is around the next day, as she probably will be, you'll appreciate her continued existence. And compare that to the father who assumes that the kid's always going to be around. That father is unlikely to be attentive. You know, when the kid comes down for breakfast, that father might just continue reading the newspaper. That afternoon, instead of playing with the kid, the father might go golfing. Because you know what? You can always play with the kid tomorrow. The first father, though, the one that actively contemplates the loss of the daughter, is going to take advantage of opportunities to interact. It's going to be a much closer relationship.
We often take things for granted, and I think one of the powerful justifications or reasons for doing negative visualization is precisely because we start appreciating things we took for granted beforehand. And this also has to do something with desire, and you bring up a phrase called hedonic adaptation. I guess two psychologists came up with that term. What is that, and how is that related to contemplating the bad things that could happen to us?
Yes, psychological adaptation is the process by which whatever you get in life, you take for granted. So really an insidious process. So here's how it works. We go through life forming dreams for ourselves. I mean, we might think of the perfect job. We might think of the perfect boyfriend or girlfriend or marrying the perfect person or having kids. And we work really hard to fulfill those dreams. And with hard work, we might succeed in fulfilling those dreams. And then a very unfortunate thing happens. We lose interest in the dream. We start taking it for granted. We marry the person of our dreams, and then 6 months later we find ourselves thinking, gee, are there greener pastures out there?
And or we buy the car we've always wanted, and we feel differently about it after a time.
Yes, and that's the standard process with consumer goods, all of the neat gadgets and leather goods and everything else we find ourselves lusting after. We get them. And there's that initial rush, I won't deny that, but then a short time later, the joy is out of the relationship or the ownership, and suddenly we want more. One of the things, if you want to have a good life will be a life in which you feel satisfied. Hedonic adaptation prevents you from gaining satisfaction because of this process, this psychological process. You work hard to get something, and then once you get it, you no longer value the thing you worked hard to get, and so you have to work hard to get something else. One of the principal insights of the Stoics is that they came across a technique to stop this psychological process, this hedonic adaptation, and the process that they invented was negative visualization. So you work hard to get something. Once you get it, how can you keep being interested in it? How can you avoid taking it for granted? They said, well, you should spend time actively thinking about what your life would be like if you lost that thing you possess. So that car you got, one thing that can happen is you drive it around and you start looking at the other cars on the road and you start thinking, I could use a newer, better car. Well, another way to do it is the car you've got. Think about how you'd feel if it were stolen, if it were taken, if you couldn't have afforded it in the first place. And you can even break this down into smaller details. One of the things you take for granted involves your car, and that is the thought that when you get in it and turn the key, the engine's going to start and you're going to go roaring off to wherever you want to go. It's useful to think when you get in and the key starts that it didn't need to start, and you could have been sitting there in that frustrated state of mind, thinking, why won't my car start? But that didn't happen. And the curious thing is, if you do enough of this, what would normally be just everyday moments in life get this kind of nice glow to them. You realize things are actually pretty good.
It's an exquisite insight, this notion of, or this, I don't know what you would say, this habit the Stoics would have us develop of desiring not what we don't have, but desiring what we already have.
Yes.
I mean, is that a big part of it?
Yes. I mean, two things. Number one, learn to want the things you already have, because you already have them. And then the second thing is, although you want the things you have, and they're very careful on this, don't cling to the things you have. So learn to want the things you already have, and at the same time, don't cling to the things you already have. And, the process I just described actually accomplishes both things. So if I imagine my car being stolen or burning up in a fire in the night or whatever, I will appreciate it more that I've got it. And also by visualizing the negative things that can happen to my car, in a sense, I prepare myself for the loss of the car. In a sense, I will have seen it coming. Same is true of friendships. Friends die. If you contemplate the loss of those friends, you accomplish two things. If you do lose it, you will have seen it coming. That'll take some of the sting out of it. And as long as the friendship continues, you'll value it much more intensely than you would if you imagined, if you took it for granted and imagined that it would always be something you could enjoy.
William Irvine is his name, Irvine. He joins us by phone from Dayton, Ohio, where he teaches philosophy at Wright State University. He's author of On Desire, Why We Want What We Want, and he's author most recently of A Guide to the Good Life, The Ancient Art of Stoic Joy. I'm CS. This is Against the Grain. Let's turn to a chapter which has as its subtitle On Becoming Invincible. What must happen in the Stoic way of thinking to our desires in order for us to be invincible?
The things life throws at you, you have to do a kind of a triage, and you have to realize that the things life throws at you fall into one of three categories. There's things over which you have complete control, things over which you have no control at all, and things over which you have some but not complete control. It's very foolish to spend your life worrying about things over which you have no control at all. And yet, so many people spend their lives doing that. What are the things over which you have complete control? Stoics said you can control your values, your goals, your character. And you should put a considerable amount of effort into developing your values, in choosing the proper values, in developing your character. What are the things you have some control over but not complete control over? Well, I mean, think about recreational activities like playing tennis. There's no guarantee that you'll win a game. Yet, by trying hard, you can affect the outcome of a game. So the Stoics would say, put your energy into that. But there are other things it's just pointless to worry about because you have no control at all over how they turn out.
Yeah, and this is really one of the puzzles because in my personal life, I will get upset over things that, of course, I realize later on or even maybe at that moment that I have no control over. It could be traffic lights. It could be the behavior of somebody whose conduct depends not at all on my conduct.
Yeah, and I guess I've gone through a kind of a personal transition here. I find being stuck in traffic, it's not perfectly tolerable. I don't know if it ever will be, but but more tolerable than it used to. It's just a different frame of mind of realizing, well, I'm stuck in traffic, and I can either let this ruin my day, and a lot of people do, or I can do my best to enjoy this little interlude and try not to let it ruin my day. I have no control over it. If I fret over it, become anxious over it, all I succeed in doing is taking a bad situation and make it worse.
Okay, so let's return to your tennis match example. So this is something that we have some control over, but not complete control, because we are playing someone else and it's up to them and their abilities to some degree. There's luck probably involved, how we happen to feel that day, the level of our performance that day. What attitude would the Stoics want us to take toward the issue of winning or losing that match?
Stoics would say that if you go into the game and your goal is to win, you're setting yourself up for possible bad feelings later on. A much wiser strategy is to, and the phrase I use for it, is to internalize your goals. So what you do is you make your goal something you do have complete or at least considerable control over, and then you can't lose. So what goal would that be? Well, the goal of trying your best in the game, of training as hard as you can for the game, of trying your best in the game. Then it's entirely within your control whether you achieve that goal. I should also point out here, by the way, that that's one of the best ways to actually win a tennis game, is to train to the best of your ability and play to the best of your ability.
Yeah, and it's fascinating what you point out in this book, which is that focusing on an external goal like winning could actually, what, hurt one's chances of achieving that very goal?
Sure. If you're intent on winning this tennis game and things start going against you, then it's easy to get rattled, and getting rattled can affect your play. But if your goal is to play to the best of your ability, then, you know, if the score isn't going quite how you want it to do, what you want it to do, you can still be confident that, well, it isn't going how I hoped, but still I'm doing the best I can in the situation, and that was my goal coming in.
Let's take a couple of other examples. So, for example, a worker trying to please her boss and a novelist who wants to get published.
Yeah, you can't be sure that you'll please your boss. Bosses can be fickle about such things. But one thing you can do is do your best. That's all you can do. I have an extended discussion of a would-be novelist. It's a very precarious position to be in, because you're going to have to experience a lot of negativity from the time when you first sit down and decide you're going to write a novel to the time you finally get it published. You're going to hear no a lot of times. You're going to find that friends and relatives aren't necessarily as encouraging as they might be. And it's going to be a very difficult process. I suspect that many novelists fail. I mean, they never publish simply because they can't stand the external failure of getting letters of rejection, or, as often happens, getting no letter at all in response to something you submit. So it's a classic example of a case where internalizing your goals is a wonderful device to use to increase your chances of success. So instead of saying, my goal is to publish this novel, say my goal is to submit this novel a certain number of times in a certain period. My goal is to make this the finest work that I can make this. My goal is to rewrite this and then rewrite it again. Goals where you have complete control. And again, the point is, those internal goals, by having those, you're less likely to experience that overwhelming sense of failure, and you're actually likely to increase your chances of succeeding.
That's William Irvin, and this is Against the Grain on listener-sponsored KPFA. My name is C.S. Song, and we are talking about his book, A Guide to the Good Life, The Ancient Art of Stoic Joy, which is kind of a handbook which presents the practical strategies forwarded by the Stoic philosophers of ancient Greece and Rome, strategies for reducing anxiety, dealing with loss, reining in our desires, dealing with insults and indignities, and leading a more fulfilling and happy life. And for a pledge of $90 or more to this radio station, to KPFA, you can get your very own copy of this book, A Guide to the Good Life, The Ancient Art of Stoic Joy. A $90 pledge gets you the book. And if you want the full-length interview that I did with Bill Irvin about this book, that is a $60 pledge. You get that interview on CD. That's 50-plus minutes of Bill Irvin talking about a lot more than you'll hear this hour. 510-848-5732 is the phone number, 510-848-5732. Toll free 1-800-HEY-KPFA, 1-800-439-5732, or 510-848-KPFA. This is, these are your thank you gifts for pledging your support to KPFA to keep Against the Grain going, to keep it, this program healthy and strong. A Guide to the Good Life by Bill Irvin for a $90 pledge, the full-length interview on CD for a $60 pledge, and you can get both for a $140 pledge to KPFA. Bill Irvin is a professor of philosophy at Wright State University in Dayton, Ohio, where he has taught since 1983. He got a B.A. in math and philosophy at the University of Michigan, and a PhD in philosophy from UCLA. And this book is about philosophy and everyday life. And it's about rethinking the assumptions of everyday life. And it's about looking at practical advice that emanated from a set of very deep thinkers in ancient Rome and Greece, among them Zeno, Epictetus, Seneca, and Marcus Aurelius. And this is the kind of book that is both really interesting and really practical, and we are offering it as a thank you gift for your pledge of $90 or more. $90 for a one-year membership in KPFA comes out to $7.50 a month. You can put that on an installment plan. You might not miss $7.50 coming out of your bank account. Or a $90 pledge to KPFA gets you A Guide to the Good Life. Again, the full-length interview with myself and William Irvin on CD for a $60 pledge, both for a $140 pledge to KPFA, 510-848-5732, 1-800-439-5732, 1-800-HEY-KPFA. I'm going to read a couple blurbs, people who've blurbed on this book. Bill Irvin has given us a great gift, the most accessible and inviting description of modern Stoicism available. Read this book and be prepared to change your life. And another reviewer in the Chronicle of Higher Education says, like the unadorned philosopher Irvin recommends, his book moves concisely through the most useful aspects of Stoic counsel. How to avoid feelings of frustration, how to prevent insults from angering us, how to overcome feelings of grief, how to avoid the cravings for fame, how to want what we already have. This is the kind of book that can, I think, change your life. And I've read it, and I really, really like it. It's on my shelf. Actually, I have a couple copies, one of whom I'm constantly lending out to friends. 510-848-5732, 510-848-KPFA, 1-800-439-5732. For a $90 pledge, you can get this book, A Guide to the Good Life, written very accessibly. And it has a number of sections on psychological insights and strategies and Stoic advice and Stoicism for modern lives and Stoic psychological techniques. You can also learn about the rise of Stoicism. A $90 pledge gets you the book. 510-848-KPFA is the number, 1-800-439-5732. Another reviewer said of this book, A Guide to the Good Life, well written and so compelling, this is a rare example of a book that actually will make a difference in the lives of its readers. Whether it's coping with grief or arriving at lasting happiness, Irvin shows with care and verve ancient Stoic wisdom to be ever relevant and very, very helpful. And another reviewer said that this book is a rare treat, a book from an academic philosopher that can actually help you improve your life. He explains the ancient Stoic way of life in a very accessible manner, and the result is a philosophy that will help you overcome suffering and achieve tranquility. 510-848-5732, 1-800-439-5732. I want to go back to more of my interview with Bill Irvin about this book, A Guide to the Good Life. Again, it's yours for a pledge of $7.50 a month over a year. That comes out to $90. You may consider KPFA to be worth $90. And again, that is your thank you gift for pledging your support. Let's go back now to more of William Irvin. And here he is taking up the issue of insults.
Insult can be a physical insult. It can be a verbal insult. But some of the best insults are insults by implication, where somebody doesn't actually say something insulting, but yet you go away feeling insulted. But the Stoics had this interesting take on insults. They are what I call insult pacifists. They said the best thing you can do in response to an insult is nothing at all. If you must say something, try to engage in some self-deprecating humor. It's something you don't hear people do very often, but I've been experimenting with it, and it seems to be quite successful as a strategy for dealing with insults.
And what can we do with our attitude toward insults? How do we take the sting out of them?
We have to realize that insults hurt because we care what other people think of us. So for them, they said it's very important that you realize that you can't control what other people think of you. You know what, even if you do wonderful things for them, even if you buy them a new car, or, I don't know, give them a kidney, you can be really, really nice to them. And it could just increase the chance that they hate you, or it could trigger envy in them. So you can't control what other people think of you. So stop worrying about it. Worry instead about things you can control, like your character. Try to become an honest person. Try to become a magnanimous person. And it's a curious thing, but there's a good chance that if you do that, people will like you better than if you went out of your way to try to make them like you.
Mm. The Stoics would also have us consider the source of the insult, correct?
Right. Realize that somebody who insults you has probably different values than you do. That's why they're insulting you. You aren't living in accordance with their values. And then once you keep that in mind, you can discount many of the insults. You realize, well, this is because he values something different than I do. I value tranquility. He values, I don't know, cars, fancy watches. He values something else. And it's sort of a shame that he values those things, because he's probably not going to have the best life possible by valuing them. So instead of getting mad at him, if anything, perhaps I should pity him for the values he has that triggered the insult that he just directed at me. And in a curious way, you transform what could be anger into pity. And, you know, Stoics, again, were careful. I don't think you should openly express your pity of the person, because that would be itself a form of insult. But it's something in your own mind that you can you can keep there, and it takes a considerable amount of the sting out of an insult.
And in this context, what do you think Epictetus, the Stoic philosopher, meant when he wrote, "What upsets people is not things themselves, but their judgments about these things"?
Right. Consider this. Here's an example. Suppose you're out for a walk and there's a neighborhood dog that's very territorial, and as soon as you walk by, the dog starts barking at you. I mean, we all agree you'd be foolish if you let that ruin your day. If you said, "Oh, that dog doesn't like me. Oh, dear, what can I do to make that dog like me?" You just ignore it. But now if the neighbor who owns the dog came out and called you a name, you'd probably let that sting you deeply. And it's because your attitude toward the dog is different than your attitude toward the neighbor. You don't care what the dog thinks of you. You do care what the neighbor thinks of you. So what puts the sting in the insult is your own mental attitude. Hey, you have control over your mental attitude. So what makes the insult sting is not the insult itself, but your interpretation of the insult.
Well, we've been talking a lot, Bill, about tranquility and kind of peace of mind, not letting things bother you, keeping desires limited to what you already have. This suggests to some degree that maybe we ought to avoid people, given that they annoy us, they get in our way, even family members can irritate us. Think of, you know, a lot of people talk about the holidays and how difficult those are with family. What did the Stoics believe about the way we ought to relate to and the degree to which we ought to expose ourselves to other people?
We have a duty toward other people. This is we have Marcus Aurelius saying, love mankind, which is something a lot of people would agree we ought to do. And his view was that the gods created us to help each other. So the Stoics, particularly Marcus Aurelius, is very big on what I call being socially useful. One of your goals in life, if you're a functioning Stoic, is to try to make yourself useful to your fellow human beings. And the curious thing is, now again, they were interested in living a good life, but I think that that's one component to living a good life, is that you're not just looking out for your own interests, but you're also trying to look out for interests of those around you.
And Bill, finally, you have adopted a Stoic way of life. You're not just describing these techniques in this book, A Guide to the Good Life, but you have practiced them. You have taken it upon yourself to see how they would work in your own life. What has happened to your desire and your sense of well-being since practicing these techniques?
Two notable things. First is, it's ruined me as a consumer. I go to the mall now. I go to the mall and I don't want the stuff. I look around and I just think, look at all the stuff I don't want. So that's one interesting thing. I don't regret that either. It's not like I'm consciously trying to stop myself from buying stuff. It's just that stuff that at one time seemed so important to me to possess no longer does. The other curious thing is, there's an element of joy in my life that previously wasn't there. And it's a curious thing, but these are just little outbursts of joy, just this feeling of well-being of, isn't it wonderful to be alive, to be on this planet? You know, it has a blue sky. The sky didn't have to be blue, but it is. And these people, they're my friends. They didn't have to be my friends, but they are. And a curious thing, when I first experienced that emotion, those little outbursts of joy, there's a real puzzle in my own mind of, well, what should I do with these things? Should I hold them at arm's length? Should I embrace them? And then it dawned on me what foolishness that was. I mean, if you experience joy, embrace it. You're a very lucky person if you can have that emotion.
William Irvin, I-R-V-I-N-E is his name. And he is a philosophy professor at Wright State University in Ohio. He's been teaching there for, I believe, 3 decades. And his book is A Guide to the Good Life, The Ancient Art of Stoic Joy. And this is our winter fun drive, the second week of it, as I understand. And we are offering you as a thank you gift for your pledge of support to this program and to KPFA. For a $90 pledge to KPFA, you can get as a thank you gift the book, A Guide to the Good Life. 510-848-5732 is the phone number. 510-848-KPFA. Or toll free, we'll pay for the call. We have some wonderful people here. Well, all of them are wonderful. We have some wonderful people here waiting to take your call and to talk with you. 1-800-439-5732. 1-800-439-KPFA. For a pledge of $90, you get the book, A Guide to the Good Life, The Ancient Art of Stoic Joy. For a pledge of $60, you get my full-length 50-plus-minute interview with Bill Irvin, and you can get both for a $140 pledge to KPFA. This book, it's just kind of, it's sort of philosophy for everyday life. And it's ancient, proven philosophy. It's philosophy that's really stood the test of time and that has been kind of revealed and analyzed and made understandable by Bill Irvin. And so what it includes is a section on the rise of Stoicism, so you learn a little bit about the history, and then a part on Stoic psychological techniques. So you have chapters on negative visualization and on becoming invincible, on letting go of the past, on dealing with the dark side of pleasure, on meditation. Then there's a part on Stoic advice. So there are sections, chapters on loving mankind, on dealing with other people, on putting up with put-downs, on overcoming anti-joy, on seeking fame, on luxurious living, on surviving a change of place, on being banished to a nursing home, on a good end to a good life. Every one of the topics I just mentioned gets a full chapter. It gets full treatment. It gets extensive treatment in this book, which is basically a concrete guide to good living, to happy living, to tranquil living. 510-848-5732 is the phone number. 1-800-439-5732. The book for a $90 pledge. That's $7.50 a month for you to get. This is your thank you gift. The full length interview is yours for a $5 a month pledge over a year. That's a $60 pledge, both for a $140 pledge to KPFA. This book is, it's just, what is it? It's more analytical than the vast majority of contemporary self-help books, but it has that element of, what can we do? What can we use? What's relevant from Stoicism to today? And that's why I think this book is so interesting and so it really pulls you in. It pulled me in. And I still actually use some of the techniques that I learned in this book called A Guide to the Good Life by William Irvin, yours for a $90 pledge. It's about tamping down desire. And when you think about it, desire is precisely what the corporate-controlled media exists to stoke and foster within you, right? It's about creating ever more and ever greater desire in people who are approached as, who are perceived as consumers. This book is about dealing with that desire, about addressing that desire. There are psychological techniques galore for attaining and maintaining tranquility. And this is a book about how to approach what comes your way, how to deal with both irritations and larger calamities, how to internalize your goals. It's a strong dose of Stoic philosophy that allows you to experience things with greater insight, greater intensity, and greater appreciation. It's a philosophy of life. 510-848-5732, 1-800-439-5732. Maybe someone you know would like or benefit from this book. Maybe somebody's birthday is coming up. Maybe you have made New Year's resolutions and you're concerned about looking back on your life and thinking there was something lacking. This book offers all kinds of insights and practical advice. And one thing I love about this book is that it's all stuff that William Irvin, the author, has practiced. These techniques, he doesn't just write about them. He has practiced them, and he tells you the impact they have had on him. And in brief, they have changed his life. He desires less. He consumes less. He has decided that this philosophy of life works for him. And if you've been listening and you have found his insights compelling and some of his practical advice useful, I urge you to get on the phone at 510-848-5732 and get his book, A Guide to the Good Life, The Ancient Art of Stoic Joy, for a $90 pledge to KPFA, and or get more insights from Bill Irvin with the 50-plus minute interview on CD for a $60 pledge, both for a $140 pledge. You know, in a sense, everything follows from your philosophy of life. You know, without a kind of structure, a set of goals, a context for how we act in the world, things can get, you know, pretty scattered and pretty, you know, things can easily upset us and irritate us, and maybe we don't have the perspective. A lot of people say, oh, you know, I wish I had perspective on what was happening to me. This book is about perspective. It's about understanding our reaction to things and improving our reaction to the events that will happen to us. Things inevitably happen to us. We are buffeted by all kinds of forces. And it's understanding what we can do, how we can act, what we can control, what we can't control, and a number of exercises and ways of thinking and addressing the events of everyday life and the special events in our lives, the traumatic events in our lives, the unusual events in our lives. Bill Irvin is interested, deeply interested in all of those things. 510-848-5732 is your entree to this book, and it's also your way of supporting KPFA and supporting Against the Grain. 1-800-439-5732. And in the remaining 9 minutes of our program, we've been given a match by Anonymous in Larkspur and Eric in Portola Valley. Thank you to Anonymous and Eric, and they've put up $600, and they are challenging you to come up collectively with $600 in support of Against the Grain by the time 9 minutes are up. And so, and in fact, if you want to call and put up your own challenge grant for future listeners during a future time period, you should feel free to do that as well. But in the meantime, a $90 pledge will get us $180, and it will get you the thank you gift of A Guide to the Good Life by Bill Irvin. A $60 pledge that gets you the CD as a thank you gift of the full-length interview, we get $120. And both the CD and the book for $140, we get $280 because of this time-sensitive match. We need to make every match we offer during this fund drive. These are real, folks. These are people who give conditionally, who give on the assumption and in order to encourage on the assumption that people will come forward with whatever they can give, whether it be $25 or $60 or $90 or $200 or $1,000, they are assuming, they are hopeful that you will come forward and support KPFA like they intend to do. 510-848-5732, 1-800-439-5732. If worry, anxiety, and fear, if those are a big part of your life, if they maybe dominate your life, if peace of mind, if tranquility and equanimity are something that you are actively pursuing, are things that you would like to have more of in your life, if contentment is an important emotion for you and you want to feel more of it, the Stoic philosophers of ancient Greece and Rome have a lot to teach you. And William Irvin is your humble guide to what they promoted, what they propagated, what they told followers and students who, when actually practicing many of these Stoic techniques, found an improvement in their lives, and it became a flourishing school in ancient Greece and Rome, a school that we can learn a lot from. 510-848-KPFA, 510-848-5732, 1-800-439-5732, 1-800-HEY-KPFA. It's an unusual book. It's a special book. It's an accessible book. It's a book that that matters to everyday life. It matters to the way we live today, more than two millennia after these people came up with this philosophy, came up with these techniques. This philosophy and these techniques are relevant today. 510-848-5732. And again, these are thank you gifts. These are ways of you telling us, and it's very important that you tell us, that you want Against the Grain to continue, that you want us to continue to do this kind of work, that philosophy matters to you, that radical politics matters to you, that political economy matters to you, that race relations and gender relations and so many more of the issues that we try and cover on this program matter to you. This is a way that you can tell us it matters to you and get a thank you gift for pledging your support. Because much as this is a program about, among other things, ideas, there are material realities that we have to deal with every day. There is the functioning of a radio station, the functioning of a transmitter. There are phone bills. There are internet bills. There are all kinds of bills that except for people like you coming forward with $90 or $60 or $25 or $1,000, without that money coming forward, coming from out of your generosity and out of your sense of giving and the importance of giving to non-commercial, non-corporate radio, we would not be here today. We would not be doing what we do. You would not have heard Bill Irvin's voice. You would not hear my voice. You would not hear Sasha's voice. And if you care about this continuing, show you care by doing a little giving. We try and give every time that we're on the air, and maybe you find it important or necessary or desirable to give every once in a while during one of these fund drives. 510-848-5732. Every dollar you give is doubled. We have 4 minutes left to make this match. Toll free 1-800-439-5732. Toll free 1-800-HEY-KPFA. It's an easy call. It'll take only a couple of minutes. They'll take out down some basic information. You'll be off the phone. You can listen to the rest of the fund drive and just enjoy the programming. You can turn me off when I start begging and pleading the next time I'm on the air. 510-848-5732. These are special thank you gifts we are offering this hour. A Guide to the Good Life, The Ancient Art of Stoic Joy by this philosophy professor who's thought a great deal about ways of living. He's considered many philosophies. He's considered many philosophies of life, and he's concluded that Stoicism, which is sorely misunderstood and badly misrepresented and has been for thousands and thousands of years, is what he can and wants to devote himself to. And these are the techniques, and these are the practices, and these are the exercises that he has found work wonders. Work wonders for him and so many people around him. 1-800-439-5732 is the phone number. 1-800-HEY-KPFA. This match of $600 is still out there. Anonymous in Larkspur, Eric in Portola Valley. Please, if you can, call in a match of your own. Maybe the stock market's been good to you. Maybe other investments have been good to you. Maybe you want to make that tax-deductible contribution right now. This is the way we survive. This is the way we do it. This is non-commercial, non-corporate foundation, non-corporate supported radio. 510-848-5732, 1-800-439-5732. $90 gets you the book, A Guide to the Good Life. $60 gets you the full-length interview on CD. There are so many more people. This book has been blurbed, and there are so many people who absolutely love this book. And I think it's partly because, as you might have heard at the very beginning of the interview, you know, many of us have this great fear that, you know, we'll put in all this effort during our lives, and then at the end of our life, we'll think back and say, gosh, you know, I've wasted it, or I've done too much worrying, or I've been too anxious, or I've spent too much time grieving, or I haven't had the kind of equanimity and peace of mind that would have made me truly effective in living and loving and caring and being an activist and being active in so many parts of our lives. This is a refreshing presentation of Stoicism, showing how this ancient philosophy can still direct us toward a better life. 510-848-5732, 1-800-439-5732. The final minute, the final push, 1-800-HEY-KPFA. If you're still listening to my voice, if you found insights galore in what William Irvin was telling me in this interview, you will want this book, you will want this interview, and you can do it, and it's a simple phone call, 510-848-5732, 510-848-KPFA. If just a couple more of you can go to those phone lines, it would make me so happy. 510-848-5732. Show you care, show you support this program, show you support KPFA. Take an action that, as one of my colleagues says, you don't have to take. That's the beauty of it. You don't have to take, but you take it anyway. You take it because your heart tells you to take it. You take it because your mind tells you to take it. You take it because you are inspired and you by KPFA and you care about this program and this radio station. Thanks to everyone who's called. I've been told we've made the